This podcast is sponsored by Aurora Packaging Solutions, a global packaging solutions provider leading the transition to a more sustainably packaged future. They specialize in developing packaging and visual communication solutions that reduce the impact on the environment and bring sustainability goals to life. With a focus on partnership and service, they create a custom solution for your business. To learn more, please visit www.ORORAPACKAGING.com. Welcome to Sustainable Packaging with Corey Connors. Today's guest is Tamid Chowdhury. He's a program manager at the University of Cambridge. How are you, sir?
Yeah, good, thank you. It's a bit later in the day than it is for you. It's 5 p.m. here, 8 a.m. yours, so I think you're a little bit more fresh.
That's all right. I'll carry it for us. Let's learn about your background. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So first thing in terms of my role, because it's probably worth elaborating a little bit. So I work at a place called the Cambridge Institute for Sustainability Leadership. It's part of the University of Cambridge, but I actually am based out in Brussels. So our headquarters are in Cambridge, as you'd expect, but I do more work out here, and I'm a program manager for industry. Mm-hmm. The short answer, and then I'm more than happy to elaborate. Essentially, it's around advocating around sustainability, how we can be more sustainable, and influencing the laws created from the European institutions, so the European Union. And we do that by bringing progressive businesses together. So a lot of my job is getting those voices, see where we can have a coherent voice, and yeah, advocating for change. That's a bit about me. Happy to share about my background as well, if you'd like.
Please, love to learn about that.
Yeah, for sure. If it wasn't apparent from my accent, so I grew up in the UK. Parents originally came from Bangladesh, studied in the UK for a while, spent some time in mainland Europe. My career background has always really been on policy, if you skip some of the studenty jobs and things like that. So I worked in the UK government for about 4.5 years. I worked in the Department for Business, as it was known, primarily, short stints at other places. And yeah, my background was in European policy. So I did a master in European studies. And it's not a coincidence, I don't think, that I ended up in Brussels, where a lot of the European policies, well, the European policies, where the sausage gets made.
Well said. That's very true. The UN meets there, and it's a big international melting pot for policy there in Europe and beyond. What we're seeing in the US is we're looking to you and your teams over there to see what's happening, to see if it works, first of all, and to see if we should follow suit, second. And it sounds mixed bag so far, but I'm sure more and more policies will come to fruition. I'd love to know some of your thoughts on how those policies are evolving and how you're seeing how effective those policies are. For in specific packaging, if you can go that way, or just sustainability, if that's easier.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you for keeping the question open. And maybe just to be helpful, because I'm going to guess a lot of people, I'm sure there's international folk, but I think it looks very different from the US and what is happening in Europe. And so maybe I'll tailor my answer a little bit in that sense. Okay. So the European Union is a complex beast when it comes to creating policy. Indeed, any system is, but just as some quick facts, the European Union is 27 member states. Once upon a time was 28, mm-hmm. until certain political events with the UK. And so there is a way of making policy. And the thing that I think where the EU is strong is, I think, particularly on some of the ways that we do regulation, which I know can, off the top, might sound a bit weird. But I think the fact that we do follow this rules-based approach that I think can have a bit more of a holistic look at things, not without its faults, but I think from a global perspective, I think the EU, one of its strengths is being able to set some wider policies that are actually a bit more forward-looking in terms of sustainability. That doesn't come without its faults. And I think from a US audience sometimes, and a business side, sometimes it's, whoa, what is that? And I think there's fair critique of it, for sure. What I would also add before going perhaps a bit more into the specifics is that I think for us in the EU, it's also a question of relevance and geopolitical autonomy. I think if we, there's the US is a massive player. There's China. How do we stay relevant as the EU? Okay, there's a lot of skills here, but also I think this point of I think the future, and this is certainly what I believe in and what we look to advocate in my role, for Europe to stay relevant, I think we've got to be on the cutting edge of some of this push towards sustainability, because we've got the skills for it. And also some of the more advanced approaches and taking that holistically with things like job protection and rights and things like that tends to happen more in Europe. Again, not perfectly, and there's many things to critique, but I think that's where we're strong at a global sort of level. And I think when it comes to sustainability policy, I think it's really important that the European level, it keeps on going. And even if it sometimes doesn't quite get it right, is approaching an ambitious way, and policymaking is its own art. So maybe I'll stop there with the first bite of that question.
Well said, and very accurate. I think we are all on the edge of our seat watching and learning from you and the people in the EU as to what's going on over there for sustainability, and specific for my world, packaging. But I'd love to know maybe something that you saw that's working really well, maybe a policy that's been instituted that you think, hey, this is really great and it should be done around the world.
Yeah. The first thing I'm going to say is that, I don't know, I just intuitively like saying it, because policies... Yeah, you know what? I'm going to zoom out a little bit before answering the question specifically. Yeah. Sorry. Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
Go for it.
Policy, because it's helpful to understand a little bit about policy. And I think we can get some very big, shiny initiatives. What I would say is that it's helpful to also think about it is sometimes it's not really about the policy. It's about clear direction, good governance. And my personal view, good governance trumps strong policy. I can give an example, and I don't have the facts off the top of my head, but one that comes off the top of my head that I've heard, DRS, and I always get the acronym wrong, but deposit refund schemes, returning, that actually works strongly. Extended producer responsibility. These are nice policies that actually work effectively. But at the same time, a good policy instrument is a narrow one that you can clearly measure that will do something quite specific. And when we're talking about sustainability, circularity, which is a lot what I focus on, what we're really talking about is systemic change. And yes, policies are good, but I think it's also how can we talk about a real shift in almost the way that our economy even runs, which is blows your brain to even think about. And yet, if, say, something like the EU or the US government or whoever isn't thinking about it, well, it's probably not going to happen. And we need our policymakers to lead, but also working with businesses to lead as well. If I may just make this point a bit, it's how can we keep the momentum of good policies, which is backed up by strong governance, to shift around sustainability? And when I say governance, it's, yeah, how do we properly implement these things? How are we monitoring things? It's the boring stuff, but it's really important.
I think it's critical. You're exactly right. What's the point of having a policy if it's not enforced, or people don't understand it, or businesses can't accommodate it? Very well said, very important to this whole discussion, because like you said, the deposit return scheme, if that isn't implemented on PAC, if it isn't clear that this item has a deposit and can be and should be returned for that money back, consumers won't know what to do. So we all must work together. I think well said. Very true. Thank you.
And if I can add on that point, I remember I have two older brothers. One worked in a consultancy, and I remember talking to an aunt about it, and I was a bit facetious about working in government. And it's fine when you're in a consultancy, and forgive me if I'm being a bit crass here, but same as a business, there are things that we just expect. The roads are going to be there. Maybe tax system is not the best. That's a bit more of a sore point. We expect these things to be there. So likewise with a DRS system or a DRS, you're expecting a place where there's even the infrastructure to be there. And so When you look at it at an EU level, there are certain countries that do this really well because there's been a policy of really promoting and building the infrastructure. Many countries there's not. And if a business has just wanted to come in and do it, well, you need the investment and you need longer term vision towards it. This would be the point as a somewhat defensive policy, because I know it can be like, oh, politicians and they squeak wag and stuff. It's not a simple game. And I also am more than happy to critique many policies, don't get me wrong. But I think it's really vital because you need that longer term vision of, okay, where are we really going with this? And it's a tricky job. You know, when I was working in government, like ministers, you don't really realize it, even as a government official or certainly within a business. And I'm really not looking to take away from it, but the amount of people with different interests, and when you're in a space where you're meant to represent everyone, that is can be a headache. It's a distinct pleasure, but it's also tough.
It's almost guaranteed to be a headache, right? Well said. Because there's no way you can satisfy everyone. I'd love to know your thoughts on, are consumers adapting to these new laws and rules? Are they on board with it, or are they pushing back?
It's not the most pretty picture. I would say, how do I answer that? The short answer is probably not as much as we would hope. I think consumers are still quite far away from it. And this is where it's really important. So for me, I live in Brussels. A lot of the people here are in the sort of political space. And so we can get so caught up. Same in Washington, same in London, although London's probably a bit bigger. You can get so caught up in the political thing, you can lose touch. And I think this is where we get a bit of this sort of elitist bubble. And even people who are really trying and really looking to go out, it's still something that we fall in, because it's my day to day. If I'm spending all the time talking to policy people, you lose touch. And bringing in a different aspect, which we talked a bit off air in terms of the point on diversity, even when I look to talk about this stuff, it's probably helpful that I have a slightly different background than a lot of the people around me. Because, hey, illustratively, I go back to my mum or my dad a little bit. My mum doesn't understand this. Parents came from Bangladesh. I'm a second generation migrant. We were pretty successful. Now we've got a relatively easy lifestyle, and that's great. But this language that we use quite often in sustainability, like, it's gobbledygook for most usual people. And also the thing that's, I'm sure it's felt somewhat in the US, but in Europe, we're really feeling it with the energy crisis with the Russian invasion in Ukraine. It's, okay, people understand climate change, but if you've got to heat your house and feed your kids, it's to some extent, it's a luxury to really think about some of the sustainability things, so many issues. Mm-hmm. So that's the balance. And so it's not, I think it can be quite easy to villainize people and be like, oh, well, people don't care or all this stuff. But it's, I think this is the level of getting to good governance, of understanding that there's a lot of different things to consider. And so we've got to really make the effort to make this relevant for people and make it easy for people. Otherwise, yeah, if you've got to feed your kids, who's going to say to a mother, don't feed your kids?
Exactly. I believe that. I interviewed my friend Chandru Wadwani from South Africa, and he runs a recycling facility there. And he said, Corey, sustainability is a luxury, and not all people can afford that. And I said, wow, really put it into perspective, like you just said. Not everyone is focusing on it, of course. Some people don't care at all because they're focusing on survival. And I totally understand that and appreciate that. But let's hope that a future is possible where sustainability can be even more affordable for all of us. Do you think that's possible? A quick break for our sponsor this month. Now is the time to go beyond recycling. SmartSolve pioneers certified bio-based water-soluble packaging technologies that empower consumers and businesses to effortlessly reduce plastic waste. Our non-toxic materials quickly and completely disperse when combined with water and agitation, thus making them easily recyclable, biodegradable, and even zero waste. If zero waste packaging interests you, please contact us today at info@smartsolve.com.
Yeah, for sure. And some of the stuff I do outside of work is also, I got really into the personal development space. And I think there's a real role here, because I think we can get so doom and gloom, certainly in the political cycle these days, and the way that we can just get media into our negative news is the news cycle. And so the doom and gloom is, it's not far, it's certainly there if any of us want it. But yeah, I think it's returning to the mindset that we hold about this. Like, we can see what we want to see. If we want to see that everything is we're all doomed, so whatever, give up, we'll find answers to show that. But I think if we can look for spaces where there's signs of hope, then great. It's there as well. There's so many really interesting, innovative things going on. One of, like, looking at some of the case studies that we do. So we work with businesses for this point of, okay, how can we put this stuff in practice? And yeah, recycling rates of, say, aluminium are really high. Yeah, great. Some really interesting innovations. One that really sticks out, I think, some of the detergents that you make, one of the stats that we published in one of our reports from one of our members, Unilever, they played around with, okay, and I'm probably slightly misquoting it, but rather than refilling your detergent, doing it through a really concentrated amount. So you actually just add water. Mm-hmm. And that reduces transport costs and transport emissions by like something over 90%. And it's a really interesting, innovative way of doing it. And so the role that I really believe we play, and for me, is to show that, okay, there's an opportunity here to do some really cool stuff and make it relevant for people. Plastic bags being banned was such a simple thing, and it's changed so much. I don't know what it's like in the US in terms of, it might be a state level or something, right?
Yeah, very fractured. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's made a really big impact. And it was that's one of the, it's not all like that, but you can have things that can make a massive impact. And hey, if nothing else, let's just see the example of COVID, where things moved like crazy when people really united. The speed of technology and shift is there too. So there's a more hopeful message.
Yeah, I love that. And you're right. COVID was a fast forward button for a lot of this, and a lot of policy and a lot of packaging innovations. I had Frederick Drew from Unilever on the podcast, and he was talking about concentrates and reusable makeup packaging and really innovative, fantastic things that are starting to come to fruition now, because that was about a year ago. But 800 brands under Unilever Prestige are working hard to innovate and accommodate these new laws. So very exciting stuff. So you're going to Packaging Europe. You want to talk about that? Or you're speaking there? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I think probably not a massive surprise considering what I said thus far. It's the European policy landscape. And I think it'll be remiss of me not to talk about some of the packaging. There's the packaging waste regulation that's going through the grinder in the European Union. There's no point in me mentioning the individual institutions. But I think my sense on this stuff, and I will go a little bit more specific, but I will feel free to give me a shake if I go so technical that I, not even technical on the packaging, but technical on weird EU jargon.
Bring on the wisdom. Yes.
So I think this is another space where we see, I think the EU has been pulling or bringing more circular economy policy is how it's being branded. So they had this very clear thing of European Green Deal meeting our targets and enshrining that in law. I think that's been a really powerful signal, not without its bumps in the road. And okay, how do we make this happen in practice? That's a very tricky question, but it sets the direction. And as a side note, I think with policy, sometimes, quite often, it is setting direction without knowing how, which is an uncomfortable space. But yeah, also just as a, because I know many people look at policies and be like, yeah, but how are you ever going to do this? Sometimes you need to do that. And sometimes it can go so far that actually it's devoid of reality. And that's the balance to play, which I think is probably a good place to come in with this new packaging and packaging waste regulation, that I think it brings more, setting regulation that wants more recycling. I think it is I think it's a positive step in terms of, I think ambition is really positive. The thing that, for those of us a bit closer, it caused a lot of noise and controversy, which was unfortunate, because I think some of it was the EU has a lot, or Brussels has, I call it a circus, because there's so many voices. So it's really hard to tell what's the sort of chalk from the chaff. It's what is really legitimate issues versus, okay, big lobbying, big conservative businesses wanting to just slow it down because it costs a lot of money and that side. Now, with the packaging and packaging waste regulation, I think we saw a bit of both, that it wasn't the most evidence-based piece of legislation, and it had bits on reuse and refill that were, the original proposal had a lot that was asserting almost that reuse was like a really positive thing. So it had targets on recycling and reuse, which actually was just quite confusing, and it wasn't the best policy. And also, so you had legitimate businesses, so some of our members as well, just being like, well, hang on, do we want to redesign this? The way this is written, almost, is it saying that we have to redesign our products to also be reusable rather than recyclable? And if you're a manufacturer, that is potentially very alarming if you're very good at one product.
It's a big shift, right? Right.
And the good thing is that, so it's created a lot of noise, but I think it's been the way that our institutions work. Like, you have the European Commission publishing something first, and then it gets amended by the different, we can call them legislators. And I think the text has improved a lot, and it's taken out some of that. And I guess going back to your question about the consumer, my concern with this one was that it created lots of noise. It caricatured as businesses on one side, NGOs and positives on the other. Some, quite often it was a lot more nuanced. And the fact that certain bits of this regulation wasn't, like the impact assessment wasn't great, like it just didn't talk about certain parts, I think it brings a lot of doubts. And a lot of this is about trust as much as actual policy. Because yep. if you believe in something and it's a target, it's completely different, even if the target's exactly the same, if you don't believe in it. So it really is a political game of bringing people with this, certainly on sustainability. I think the risk of this file is that it's fed in a little bit of, there's a feeling of fatigue going around and too much legislation. There's a narrative in Brussels, and not without reason, there has been a lot. And it's not, you have a piece of legislation over here and another one over here. And if it gets quite confusing and quite hard to actually know what you have to do. So that is a legitimate point. But also, that's the important thing, is that's not a reason to, like, okay, let's just pause on sustainability policy, because we've got to do something. So without going too much further into it, I think hopefully that gives a good flavor of, I think, some of the things going on in our weird and wonderful world of Brussels.
Yeah. Yeah. And very important points. Are we doing too much? Are we not doing enough? Is it too little, too late? There's a feeling of, like you said, frustration. Hey, maybe we could just get this, figure out this policy and then try another one. But no, instead they're instituting four at the same time. And even more, I've heard, are in the works. So let's hope that doesn't get muddled and confused.
The one thing I would say about this is, I think the framing of less and more is probably not the most, isn't the way I would phrase it in to be the most constructive, let's put it that way. I think it's about, can we just improve the way that we do policies? Because it's right. not really about the amounts. Sometimes you do need more. And let's be honest, if the market was going to just sort this problem out, we would be a lot further ahead. I think there has to be some level of leniency for mishaps just because of the nature of policy. And that's not a popular thing to say. Now, that said, I think it's about improving policymaking in the first place. Like, how can we make it more holistic? So it's not, because it's a very practical thing. We forget sometimes these big institutions, they are just humans. So you get this building over here, which is, I don't know, the Environment Directorate General. And then you get one over here, which is more focused on competitiveness, industry. And like any organization, if they don't talk to each other very well, which, spoiler alert, they don't always, this is where you get the issues. And so if we can improve the way that it's just a lot more coherent and comprehensively thought about, not an easy task, also including, I don't know, more stuff around, say, just transition, how fair are we making this, and all many other elements. Again, this is the thing with government, you can't just care about one thing. But I think that's something to really strive for. And the more we can do that, the less we'll have these issues, because I think the issues are just one person saying one thing, another person saying another. It's confusing.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Tommy. This has been awesome. I really appreciate your wisdom, and I'm excited to meet you in person in Amsterdam in November at Packaging Europe. Can you tell the audience how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, for sure. Just to say, yeah, a real pleasure. Yeah, hopefully this was insightful. Maybe something slightly different and an introductory side to understand a bit more about what's going on in Europe. So you can reach me, I think best is on LinkedIn. I'm also on Instagram. But so I think my actual LinkedIn, if you search Tamer Chowdhury, I think my actual handle is Tamer Chowdhury 1. Let me just, yeah, it's so TAHMIDCHOWDHURY 1, as in the number. And yeah, I use social media a lot. So if you drop me a message and stuff, I do tend to reply. I sometimes miss ones, but I'm one of the more responsive people I know.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And excited to see you in just a few weeks.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity.
This episode is sponsored by SpecWrite, the first purpose-built platform for specification management. So much has changed. when it comes to packaging, and there's a new book to help you stay ahead of the curve, The Evolution of Products and Packaging, written by longtime packaging executive Mr. Matthew Wright, helps you unpack industry trends and explains how you can use data to drive packaging innovation and sustainability. Download your free copy today at specright.com/book. That's SPECRIGHT.com/book.